This is Digital Story Podcast number 979, December 24th, 2024. Today's theme is New Linux, Adobe Price Hike, and more. I'm Derek Story. For a photographer, the shortest day of the year, December 21st, means that we only have about 9 hours of light. Not much time to get out there and shoot. Fortunately, there have been some interesting news stories inside. So brew up another cup of coffee, put your feet up, and let's see what's going on out there. I hope you enjoy the show. Before we get into the news stories, I would be remiss not to wish you a happy holidays, regardless of how you spend your holiday season. I just got back from spending time with my sister down in Southern California, and I got to see my aunt, my uncle, their families, of course, my brother-in-law. It was really terrific, and it was fun to catch up and just spend some time together, have a few meals together. But we have some interesting stuff going on in the world of photography as well, even though this is the holiday season. So I thought I'd catch you up on a few of the news stories. And let's start out with one that I think is a good one. I like this one. Not all of them today are good, but this one is. U.S. Senate passes bill that makes it easier for photographers to film in national parks. And this is on Petapixel, and I have a link to it in the show notes. Let's see what's going on here. The U.S. Senate passed a bill that makes it easier to film in national parks and eliminates the need for photographers and videographers to secure permits. On Friday, the Senate passed the Explore Act, which will do away with requirements for permits for all commercial photography and filming in national parks. President Joe Biden is expected to sign the Explore Act into law. The bill comes one day after the National Press Photographers Association filed a lawsuit against the National Park Service, claiming that these filming permit requirements violate First Amendment rights. Currently, filmmakers must obtain a permit and pay a fee if they intend to later profit from their footage in national parks, even if they are using the same handheld camera or phone that a tourist would use. Permits are routinely denied for arbitrary and unpredictable reasons, making it difficult for people like documentary filmmakers, press photographers, and wedding videographers to earn a living. According to a press release by Free Speech Advocacy Group, Foundation for Individual Rights in Expression, the Explore Act will no longer require photographers or videographers to get filming permits because they may be paid for footage or images. So this is good news, and there's more to the story in the Petapixel article. So if you'd like to learn about it, you should go right over there and see what they have to say. And I think even for me, and I'm going to look into this, but one of the reasons why I've stayed away from national parks for our workshops is because of this whole permit issue and getting permission and all that sort of stuff. So I'm going to look into the language of this and see if that helps us out as well. Now, the other issue is, of course, national parks tend to be very crowded these days. So there's actually two things going on. But if I find out that the restrictions are no longer as oppressive as they have been in the past, then maybe it just becomes a timing issue, and maybe we can go to national parks more often for our photography work. So no matter how you slice it, this looks like good news for photographers and videographers. Photoshop's new reflection removal tool. This is an article that's on fstoppers.com, and I have a link in the show notes. Dealing with reflections can be frustrating, especially when shooting through glass. Photoshop's new reflection removal feature aims to simplify this process. While still in beta, the results it delivers on specific types of reflections are impressive. And then they have a video here that you can watch about it. The tool, accessible through Adobe Camera Raw in Photoshop or Bridge, is currently designed for RAW files only, though Adobe plans to support non-RAW files in the future. The tool is not generative fill, but instead uses AI to target reflections on plate glass windows that cover most or all of the field of view. It's less effective for smaller, more distant windows or objects like wine glasses or car bodies. The video highlights a few cases where the tool excels, like a cafe window with text on the glass, or a reflective backsplash in a kitchen. In these scenarios, the tool nearly eliminates the reflections, leaving only minimal traces that are easy to clean up. While the tool is limited to specific types of reflections, its potential for more complex scenarios could grow in future updates. That looks pretty cool. I haven't tried this out yet. I saw the headline when it was first released. And because I don't spend a lot of time in Photoshop these days, for me, it would mean going outside of my workflow in order to test it. But then again, if I really needed it, it would probably be worth it. Of course, like a lot of other photographers, I'd like them to get all the bugs worked out and then bring it in the Lightroom where I spend far more time hanging out than I do in Photoshop. But this does look like a useful and interesting new tool from our friends at Adobe. Speaking of Adobe, however, this next article comes to us from DP Review, and it isn't good news if it pans out to be true. Your Lightroom or Photoshop plan may be getting more expensive. And I have a link to the entire article from DP Review in the show notes. Adobe is raising the price of some of its photography-focused Creative Cloud plans. The monthly Lightroom plan is going from $9.99 a month to $11.99 a month, and the monthly photography plan, which includes Photoshop, Lightroom, and 20 gigabytes of cloud storage, is going from $9.99 a month to $14.99 a month for existing subscribers. However, that tier will no longer be available for new subscribers, regardless of whether you're paying monthly or annually. The annual versions of the plans are not increasing, remaining at $120 a year. The pricing changes will take effect for new customers starting Wednesday, January 15th, 2025. For customers on an annual paid monthly plan, the price will go up upon their next renewal. In case you're not intimately familiar with Adobe's photography plans, here's a chart explaining what they are and what they cost. And this chart is definitely worth hopping over to the article. So you have the Lightroom 1 terabyte plan, which includes Lightroom, just, you know, the Lightroom app, and 1 terabyte of cloud storage for $9.99 a month. Right now, the new price will be $11.99 a month, but the annual $119 a year will remain the same. It will be available to new subscribers. Now, what many of us have, which is the photography plan, which includes Lightroom, Photoshop, Lightroom Mobile, 20 gigabytes of cloud storage, that's currently $9.99 a month and has been for some time. It will be going to $14.99 a month, but it will remain at $119 a year. So if you want to bypass that price increase, basically you move from monthly payments to annual payments. And that will not be available to new subscribers starting January 15th. This move makes it substantially more expensive to get into Photoshop and Lightroom ecosystem for users who can't shell out for annual plans, as the affected plans are the cheapest way to access the apps. That's especially true with the discontinuation of the 20 gigabyte photography plan for new subscribers. Previously, you could get Photoshop and Lightroom for $10 a month, but you'll have to go up to the $20 a month photography plan, which includes 1 terabyte of storage instead of 20 gigabytes. Adobe says the price increase for the Lightroom 1 terabyte plan will come with one perk, The plan will now include access to Lightroom Classic alongside Lightroom for desktop, mobile, and web. Previously, you had to subscribe to one of the photography bundles to get access to that particular version of the app, which includes some features not found in the more modern cloud-based version. And I will tell you, that is the version Lightroom Classic that 80% of our workshop attendees use. The photography plan has existed at its current price for a long time. In November 2013, we wrote about how it was being made available for $9.99 a month. And at the time, it included Photoshop CC, Bridge CC, Lightroom 5, and 20 gigabytes of cloud storage, very similar to the current offering. Adobe says the price hikes are meant to better reflect the value that the apps deliver. However, news follows a notable downturn in the company's stock price. Earlier this month, the company reported record earnings for Q4 2024 and predicted it would earn even more in 2025. Despite this, the stock fell by over 15% after the news, according to Forbes, and hasn't recovered by time of the writing. Well, I'm on the monthly plan right now, and it looks like if I want to not pay more, I'm going to have to switch over to the annual plan. Not thrilled about it, but at least they didn't raise the price for the annual. Such is life in the world of subscriptions these days. I'm planning my 365 photography project now. Here's why I'm not waiting until the new year and my number one secret for success. Okay, and this is an article that is on Digital Camera World. And I'm talking about this article or pointing to it because some of you may have been thinking about doing a 365 photography project where you take a picture every day. And if you are, this guy does a pretty good job, Mike Harris, of outlining a way to be successful. So let me read you a little bit about it. I'm about to embark on quite a photography milestone, a 365 project. That means I'll capture at least one photo every single day throughout 2025. It's a huge commitment, and the key to success is good planning. That's why I'm planning my 365 photography project right now and not waiting until the new year. My one big secret to a successful 365 project is finding a good middle ground. By that, I mean aiming to capture photographs that interest and challenge you, but aren't so complicated that they take hours of your time. Suffice to say, I won't be rising at 4 a.m. every day to capture a sunrise, but I won't be popping out to take a quick, low-effort snap either. Don't feel limited by your camera kit either. It doesn't matter whether you have the best professional camera, the best film camera, or you're using one of the best camera phones. You can capture a 365 project on anything. The trick is to plan and bank a good number of photo ideas, some requiring more effort than others, so you know exactly what you're going to shoot each day and can quickly draw on something in a pinch. But it's also worth noting that photographs that are interesting and challenging don't have to take up lots of your time. If you come home late one evening, rain is pouring outside, and you've collapsed on the couch, you might decide to capture an abstract image in your living room. This probably won't take you long, but it will be challenging. Other days, you may find yourself with more time. If you're on vacation in a national park, for example, that would be a fine time to capture a landscape at sunrise or sunset. And finally, don't get yourself down if you miss a day. You cannot expect an entire year to go perfectly to plan. If you're unwell or have an emergency to attend to, life comes first. There's no harm in missing a couple days. Simply make up for the lost time by shooting more photos the following day and continue with your 365 project. So then he breaks it down. So here's how he breaks down his plan. I'm not going to read you the details of each step, but I'm going to give you the steps right now. And like I said, the link to this article is in the show notes, which is on Digital Camera World. Number one, make a weekly plan. Number two, try a new genre. Number three, missed a day? Don't panic. Number 4, keep it simple. Number 5, team up. Number 6, get inspired. Number 7, share your work. Number 8, edit your photos. And finally, he wraps with, you don't have to edit every single photo you capture, and you don't have to spend hours in the editing suite either. All right, I have never myself embarked upon a photography 365 project. I just know right now I would not see it through. I don't know. It's just, that's a whole year. But if any of you are going to do it, I would love to hear about it. And I'd love to hear about it as it goes. So you can send me email to dstory@gmail.com, comment on our Facebook page, or comment on our Inner Circle page if you're an Inner Circle member. But there you go. Maybe 2025 is the year you do a 365 photography project. And finally today, Panasonic brings refreshed DC G97 and ZS99 models with subtle updates. This article is on DP Review, and I have a link to it in the show notes. Panasonic has refreshed two of its more affordable models, creating the G97 from the G90, 91, 95D, and the ZS99 30X compact camera from the ZS80D and the TZ95D. Alphabet soup, right? Alphabet soup. Let's talk about the DC G97 first. This is the one I was more interested in. The G97 is the more subtle of the two updates. The 20 megapixel Micro Four Thirds camera gets a higher resolution rear screen and USB-C connector as its main updates. The USB-C socket offers only USB 2.0 speeds and can be used for charging the camera, but doesn't provide the ability to power it while in use. It also sees its Bluetooth feature brought up to the version 5.0 standard, a dedicated button for smartphone image transfers, a red frame around the screen when recording video, and the ability to tag videos shot in portrait orientation. Other than this, the G97 is essentially the same camera as the G90/91, launched in 2019, and the G95D, which itself was an updated variant of the US market G95 with a nicer rear screen. When I first saw this headline, I was going, ooh, a new Micro Four Thirds camera. I'm intrigued. And then I saw that it was just a minor update. You know, I'm really hoping/counting on Panasonic to do something in the Micro Four Thirds space. I mean, I'm happy about this camera. I'm happy that it's out. I'm happy about the refresh. But I can't say that I'm excited, especially with a 20 megapixels sensor. So anyway, there it is. The DC G97 will be available in mid to late February 2025 at a recommended price of $849 in a kit with the 12 to 60mm f3.5 to 5.6 power OIS lens, a $350 reduction compared to the introductory price of the original DC G95 in 2019. So they also have another camera here that I talked about, the DC ZS99, and that's a pocketable camera. I'm not going to go into too much detail on it. I'll just read you the basics here. The ZS99 represents a slightly more significant change. It too sees the addition of a USB 2.0 Type-C socket. However, the other change relative to the ZS80D that preceded it is the removal of the electronic viewfinder. Panasonic believes there is a larger audience for whom an EVF isn't considered essential compared to those who insist on one. And I'm going to stop right there because Most of this audience insists on an EVF, as does the person reading this article. All right. That camera will be out for a recommended price of $499, a $50 increase over its predecessor. You can read about all of this with the link in the show notes to the DP Review article. Okay, stick here with a little virtual camera club news. I want to give a big thanks to our Inner Circle members. These are the people that support our podcast month in and month out. They have their own space on Derek Story Online, and they also receive discounts for all workshops in 2025. If you're interested in becoming an Inner Circle member, just click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. You can sign up there, and before you know it, you'll be receiving an invite from me to join the Inner Circle space on Derek Story Online, and all of your benefits will be available immediately. And a big thanks to our Inner Circle members for supporting this community. And finally, I want to give acknowledgement to our friends at Red River Paper. So when I was down at my sister's, I distributed my holiday greeting cards that I made, and I think they turned out really well. And it was very fun to get comments from people. You know, they're asking me about elements of the card, like, where was that? And they acknowledged the handmade quality of the card. And it made for a very nice personal topic for conversation. It's just like, you know, I was probably the only handmade holiday card they got that evening, right? I would say odds are very good at that. And it reaffirms to me taking an extra hour or two to produce, you know, handmade cards or enlargements of images that may mean something to folks. And just let them know that, you know, they are special. You made this for them. And then you put a nice note on the inside. All of this is made possible by our good friends over at Red River Paper. They have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. You can click on it, go to our landing page, nose around a bit, use our discount code for free shipping, and make yourself some beautiful artwork that you can share with others. And this holiday season in particular, I'd like to thank Red River Paper for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me today. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'm off for a little holiday cheer, but I'll be back next Tuesday. Until then, have a great week. Be thankful for what you have. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.